training camp is just around the corner. We can all smell real football coming. So if you've been really sick of hearing my voice through the offseason talking about things that don't involve actual football, you just got one more episode to get through, then we can see the light. Welcome to Roughing the Kicker on ArrowheadAddict.com, Arrowhead Addict Radio. I am Joshua Briscoe. On this episode, I'm going to discuss the impact of the Chiefs starting the season without top cornerback Sean Smith and how they're going to deal with the loss of him for those first three games, and also why it's a three-game suspension and not the two-game suspension we were expecting. Then I'm going to talk about why the Chiefs must find Dontari Poe's backup, and soon. Then I'm going to look into a couple of tweets that were sent to me over the last week, looking into the future of Eric Kush, a little bit of Eric Fisher, identifying the three most important games of the Chiefs season, and a little bit of other news from across the board. And again, this is the last show that's going to happen before training camp. So I'm going to say at the top of the show right now, if you're going to be at training camp, be tweeting me at JB Briscoe with whatever you're seeing, whatever you're focusing on. I want to hear about what you're seeing and what we need to be talking about as training camp continues on as we go into the season. So you're all my reporters, but unfortunately, this is an unpaid internship and not for college credit. Got to kick off with the biggest news of the week, and it is the official suspension of Chiefs cornerback Sean Smith, number one cornerback Sean Smith. I don't want to sell him short because though I'll be talking about how the Chiefs are going to replace him, this is a big loss for the Chiefs. Now, the NFL is suspending him for three games after he pled guilty last month to a DUI, he received 2 years probation, and an early report said he does not plan to appeal. So it really will be three games for Sean Smith. Now, we were all expecting two, a DUI equals a two-game suspension from the NFL, but Ian Rappaport said the usual suspension for a DUI is two games, unless there are extenuating circumstances. Chiefs cornerback Sean Smith hit a street lamp. That led to the extra game. So we know why Sean Smith is out for three games. It's because he hit a street lamp with a DUI. Also, something that was interesting, TJ Carpenter of 810 was talking about this on his late-night show a couple days ago. He was sort of making sure we all get to keep in mind the fact that DUIs are actually a big deal and actually deserve the suspensions that Sean Smith just got. Even though it's really easy for him to play on the team that you're rooting for or that I'm rooting for, you want to say, well, you shouldn't have had three games, it should be two. The street lamp, who cares about the street lamp? DUIs are a serious offense, and in a world where the NFL is giving out four-game suspensions for PEDs and many, many more for that than domestic abuse, remembering the consequences of what a DUI could lead to is sort of it's sort of easy to forget about that. So I have no problem with him getting a three-game suspension. The Chiefs don't have a problem with it. Seems like Sean Smith doesn't have a problem with it. It's three games for Sean Smith, and that's appropriate for what he did. Now we have to just go back to the field strictly and look at what the Chiefs are going to do going forward. Now, when you look at the games first, and those three games are going to be bloody ones, the Chiefs kick off the season at Houston playing the Texans. Now, the quarterback situation there is always murky because it's Houston. I actually had to look up who Houston's quarterback was at this point. I forgot they went and signed Brian Hoyer. Their quarterback depth chart right now is Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, and Tom Savage. I do not fear Brian Hoyer shredding this Chiefs defense, and for a couple of the reasons that I'll get to later for the more important or more difficult games, but we can let the Houston game go. It's DeAndre Hopkins is going to be a big deal. He's their best receiver with Andre Johnson gone, and Cecil Shorts is their other number one receiver at this point. It looks like the Texans' offense, other than Arian Foster, is going to be pretty anemic again. They did draft Jalen Strong, but the rookie on rookie matchup that could be Marcus Peters and Jalen Strong, you expect Philip Gaines to be over on DeAndre Hopkins there. Cecil Shorts can be picked up by whoever won Cecil Shorts. That Houston game is not horrifying. Now, they could go opening the NFL season on the road is not an easy task. It wouldn't shock me by any means if the Chiefs lost in Houston. However, for the sake of like the Sean Smith point, I'm not horrified about what's going to happen with the Texans and the Chiefs secondary. But then week two, Thursday night football, it's the Chiefs at home against the Denver Broncos. They have 4 days rest. Both teams have 4 days rest. It's on NFL Network, it's on CBS, that night game. Thursday night football, Peyton Manning comes to Arrowhead. Losing Sean Smith for this game is really a bummer. This feels like such a good time for the Chiefs to have a shot at finally beating the Peyton Manning-led Broncos. It's Gary Kubiak, his second game with Denver. Peyton Manning had a shaky end to last season. I expect him to get back into the groove pretty well. But Manning lost one of his big weapons from last year that's a really great weapon against defenses because he's a matchup issue, Julius Thomas, the tight end, who is now in Jacksonville. But the Broncos just worked out a long-term deal with Demaryius Thomas. He's obviously a force, and that's who would have been matched up against Sean Smith. Wes Welker is gone. Eric Deckers is mercifully not there anymore. I have nightmares about Eric Deckers to this day. But their starting tight end is Virgil Green. And Owen Daniels is also with Denver right now. So the tight end position with the safeties, Ron Parker playing safety, that feels okay. But then you look at Demaryius Thomas being matched up against, maybe this is Marcus Peters' first big contest, and I would actually expect that to be the physical matchup that makes the most sense, because Philip Gaines and Steven Nelson, the third-round pick from this season, Gaines and Nelson were both traditionally slot corner guys. Now, Philip Gaines is going to be playing more outside, and he's probably going to be playing outside for all three of these games. And Steven Nelson, again, a rookie, and Marcus Peters, also a rookie, will probably be getting a lot of playing time these first 3 weeks. But maybe you put up Demaryius Thomas, one of the best receivers in football, one of the best big physical receivers in football, with one of the best quarterbacks in football, up against a rookie in his second game, Marcus Peters. That's horrifying. Even in Arrowhead, that's horrifying. Emmanuel Sanders gets matched up maybe against Phil Gaines, maybe let Peters go there, and then Andre Caldwell will be running the slot for the most part with Denver. That's a scary set of receivers up against the secondary. Now, if the secondary was circled around Sean Smith, and you let Smith get some help from a guy like Ron Parker. Now, Ron Parker playing safety, I might add. I don't want to see Ron Parker go back to corner at all. He's not a good cornerback. He's a very good safety, and he keeps getting better at safety. Ron Parker, the safety, I'm very cool with. Tyvon Branch at safety, Hussein Abdullah. The Chiefs have secondary depth all around, really, but taking your best corner out of the conversation, Sean Smith, is a huge loss. And then let's go ahead and go to week three, and then I'll come back to sort of my overall thought, other than Ron Parker staying at safety, which is huge. Week three was going to be a loss anyway, in my opinion. Monday Night Football, long week for the Chiefs. They get an extra several days rest, but Monday Night Football on ESPN at the Green Bay Packers. I don't know if it would matter if this team had Darrelle Revis here. It's so hard to pick against the Packers at home. In the third week of the season, where the Chiefs are going to be, if not starting two rookie corners, playing two rookie corners pretty intensely. Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, now the tight ends for the Packers haven't been that big of a deal lately. And it almost doesn't matter because Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback. That's the key here. Eddie Lacy is a huge run threat. Aaron Rodgers will get the ball to everyone and anyone he wants to get the ball to. Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb are going to have huge games, if I had to make a prediction now. It's going to be an ugly one. The only way the Chiefs are going to keep up here is if the Packers' defense takes a step back and the Chiefs' offense can actually somehow thrive in Green Bay on Monday Night Football. Winning in Green Bay, night game, Monday Night Football, I'm chalking that up as a loss right now. And again, it wouldn't be the most shocking thing that's ever happened if they were to win that game. But I in no way would ever predict that here. Aaron Rodgers is going to know, and this also is true for Peyton Manning and not true for Brian Hoyer. Rodgers and Manning are going to look at this Chiefs setup. And then now I'm going to give you all of the names, not just Nelson and Peters, but all of the names that could be stepping in here. They're going to know exactly who they want to target. So you're expecting Philip Gaines probably to be starting on the outside, even though he was more of a natural slot, or he was at least projected to be a slot corner when he came into the league. He's probably going to have to play outside. Marcus Peters probably going to have to play outside and just get bathed in the league with fire. And then your slot guy could be Steven Nelson. But if it's Steven Nelson, these quarterbacks are going to know this is a guy, third-round pick, coming into the league, just getting thrown into the fire. That's a really scary setup there. But the other options for the Chiefs are also scary in different ways. Jamel Fleming and Marcus Cooper both have shown sparks in their time. Now, Cooper, really, it seems like he's had pretty much a downslope to his career in Kansas City since he had such a nice run right out of the gate with the Chiefs. But Jamel Fleming, it seems like he improved throughout the season. He showed some flashes. And then Sanders Cummings also, he's constantly injured. And he's listed on ourlads.com's depth charts, which is an unofficial depth chart, but they have to do a really good job of keeping rosters up to date. He's listed as a corner. I feel like he spent a lot of time trying to play safety also. But he's injured all of the time, and he's a pretty unknown quantity. So it seems like as far as corners go, it's going to be Philip Gaines for sure. No Sean Smith, obviously, and then a mixture of Marcus Peters getting into the league really quickly, and Jamel Fleming, with Steven Nelson and Marcus Cooper playing when they have to. And they're going to have to play a lot. Cooper might be cut whenever Sean Smith returns. Also, Kevin Short, we talked about a tiny bit here and there as a undrafted free agent, kind of long shot guy. Keep an eye on him in training camp. Keep an eye on all of those guys in training camp to see in the preseason for sure. Don't expect Sean Smith to play very much in the preseason. So all of those guys are going to have a big role to play whenever this Sean Smith suspension actually comes to light. And Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning are waiting on the doorstep. But there's one extremely, extremely important factor here that I haven't mentioned yet. I don't think I've heard mentioned anywhere with this Sean Smith situation that is incredibly, incredibly important. Now, also, along with Ron Parker staying at safety and not getting to a corner, the pass rush is going to be an enormous, enormous, enormous factor in these games. If Tom Bahali, Justin Houston, Dee Ford, and Dontari Poe can all get pressure, can all get to the quarterback, it doesn't take a whole lot, if we're being honest, to rattle Brian Hoyer and to keep the Brian Hoyer, Denard Hopkins connection on the down low. I'm not horrified of that. In fact, I think that's a game that we have to expect the Chiefs to win even on the road. Although the Chiefs could honestly start 0-4 to this season. Week 4 is at Cincinnati, and then still be a 9-7 team. Not easily, but could be. But winning against Houston at Houston would be a nice way to start the season. The pass rush, though, will be incredibly, incredibly important. If Peyton Manning gets knocked around, he takes a significant step down, as most quarterbacks do. We talked about that last week a little bit with Alex Smith. But Peyton Manning's offensive line right now is the most suspect part of that team, I would say. And if they can exploit that, if the Chiefs can exploit that and get to Peyton Manning, it's going to be a huge, huge, huge factor in that game in Kansas City. And that's, frankly, the only way I think the Chiefs win that game, is if they get up in Peyton Manning's face and knock him around to where he can't pick on Marcus Peters or whoever is coming up against his weapons that outrank the Chiefs' corners. It won't matter if he's getting knocked around too quickly. The issue here is Peyton Manning has a notoriously quick release, and he's incredibly, incredibly good at not getting knocked around, even whenever he has pressure. So that's going to be a battle that, again, at this point, I would expect the Chiefs to lose the battle of getting to Peyton Manning first. But in Arrowhead, if that pass rush can get to him, losing Sean Smith is going to be huge, but it's not going to be the totally fatal blow if Manning gets knocked around. Now, I don't even know if that's as true with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is much more mobile. It's going to be in Green Bay. The home field advantage will be off the charts there. So I don't want to call the Green Bay game a lost cause. No NFL game is over before it begins. That's just not how professional football works. But focusing on those first 2 weeks, we'll get to Green Bay when it gets there, but getting at Brian Hoyer, Sean Smith will be missed, but not as much as you might think. But then in Arrowhead, if the Chiefs are going to take that game from the Broncos and Peyton Manning, get their first victory off Peyton Manning as a Bronco, it's going to have to happen with a pass rush and with Justin Houston earning this contract we talked about last week. Now let's talk about another very important defensive force for the Kansas City Chiefs, Dontari Poe. Now, he's under contract through this season and next season with the Chiefs, and I'm going to have an article coming out on Arrowhead Addict very soon about Dontari Poe and the importance of finding his backup. But before that article hits the site, here's what you need to know about Poe and why his backup is so hugely important. These are stats that again, will be coming out in my article in probably just a couple of days. In his first season, 2012, Poe led Chiefs defensive linemen with over 700 defensive snaps. No other defensive tackle had more than 150. In 2013, Poe had 975 defensive snaps, almost 1,000 defensive snaps, seventh most among all defensive linemen in the NFL, and most among an interior defensive lineman, defensive tackles, nose tackles, most among interior defensive linemen in 2013. Then he repeated that feat in 2014, 944 snaps on defense, again led the NFL among interior defensive linemen. It's one of the most brutal spots, and maybe in all of sports, certainly one of the most brutal spots in football. Every single play, he's essentially getting hit by two 350-pound men trying to knock him over or knock him in a direction, and he has to fight back against it. Poe is in an extremely difficult physical position every single play, and he's had almost 1,000 snaps the last two seasons. Now, last year, well, both of those seasons, we should add, that Poe visually, clearly declined throughout the season. Not that his play got worse necessarily, but that we saw him seem drained. We saw him seem worn down. Because, again, one more time, he had almost 1,000 snaps. The last three seasons combined, or his all of his three seasons combined, he's been around 2,500 snaps at nose tackle, playing nose tackle. Of course he looks like he's wearing down towards the end of the season. He is. That's exactly what's happening, because he's in an incredibly physically demanding spot, and no one else is taking any snaps from him. Last season, the defensive linemen on the Chiefs that gave him a breath at all are no longer here. Vance Walker and Kevin Vickerson are now with the Broncos and the Jets, respectively, and those are the only guys who got any work behind Poe, with the exception of one guy who took two snaps that I'll talk about in my article. We've seen Poe wear down. This is not an accident. This is not something we can't figure out why it's happening. It's because Poe is doing so much work and getting so little time off. Now, it's counterintuitive, of course, to say, yeah, take one of the biggest forces on your defense off the field for 10 to 15 snaps per game. But if he doesn't get off the field 10 to 15 snaps per game, he's not going to be on the field very much longer. And even worse, there could be a catastrophic injury. There could be consistently wearing down. He could fall off before the Chiefs re-sign him, and I think that's one reason they shouldn't re-sign him before they have to, because his ceiling is very high, but he could fall off the earth if he keeps getting all this workload. If you want to hop over to baseball for a second, it's like giving CeCe Sabathia all of those innings before he was going to get traded by the Brewers. He was just getting pounded with innings. Of course, everyone's expecting his arm to be ready to fall off anytime soon. That's how pitchers work. It's going to happen with your nose tackle also. He can't get hit that much that constantly. I don't even have the number anymore, but back in the dominant season for Ravens nose tackle Haloti Ngata, he had 819 snaps in 2012. He was an All-Pro. I do still have that stat. Haloti Ngata had 819 snaps in 2012, and he was an All-Pro. You can be an All-Pro with just over 800 snaps, and if you were to give Poe 10 snaps off per game, you're obviously cutting off around 160 snaps for the entire season. Cut him down from that 944, give him a little less than 10 snaps off per game. He has 800 in an entire season. That's something where he can keep that up through the whole year, and to get hit 150 less times is forceful. That matters. So now the question becomes, well, what are the Chiefs going to do? Well, I guess I don't want to give my whole article right off the top, but there are a few guys on the Chiefs roster currently, including the draft pick Raheem Nunez-Roches, who I've talked about a few times. A few guys on the roster who could step up and need to step up and take some of those snaps. That'll all be in that story. But another name thrown out is one that I hadn't considered that came from Ben Almquist. He's at Citadel Chief on Twitter, writer for Arrowhead Addict. He said the Chiefs should be reaching out to Barry Cofield, give him a one-year deal to get back in the game, and the Chiefs get a much-needed sub for Poe. I can't agree more with this. Barry Cofield, he was with the New York Giants from 2006 through 2010, and then with Washington from 2011 through 2014. He played only 8 games last year. Here are a few, dating back to February through July, headlines put together on rotoworld.com on Cofield's profile. Washington nose tackle Cofield may likely have to take pay cut. Washington axes Barry Cofield, save $4 million against the cap. Cofield undergoes surgery on hip. Cofield says he's completely healthy. That's as of July 21st. That was just a few days ago. It says free agent defense tackle Barry Cofield, hip, ankle, abdomen, says he's 100% healthy. Cofield says he's simply waiting for a call. His body may not be able to take much more, though Cofield missed a bunch of time last season with a high ankle sprain and a double sports hernia surgery. He also required off-season surgery for a torn labrum in his hip. Cofield turned 31 this past March. If the Chiefs were to give Cofield, we talked about Chiefs have new cap money after they extended Justin Houston or signed Justin Houston to a long-term deal. If they were to give Cofield whatever couple million dollars that he would need to come in for one season, maybe Washington saved $4 million against the cap when they released him. Maybe they could give him three. Give Cofield $3 million to come in and say, your job is, we know you're 31, we know you have injury issues, but come in and play 10, 15 snaps per game, probably just 10. You can give him 10 snaps per game consistently throughout this season. Give Poe some time off. Then if you want to have a heavy set at any point, maybe when you want to run a 4-3. Right now, the Chiefs can't run a 4-3 front at any point because I don't know who they would put beside Poe. But we know Bob Sutton likes to do a lot of different formations and everything. So maybe Cofield gets 10 snaps a game at nose tackle, and then another 5 or 10 in a 4-3 front, depending on what the Chiefs decide to run from that given game. I would absolutely be behind this signing. That would still, if I'm just throwing $2.5 million out basically aimlessly, but throw out $2.5 million, it would leave the Chiefs enough room to sign to get up to their 53-man number, and then to sign maybe a veteran who gets released with training camp. After training camp, bring in a few other guys for tryout, stuff like that. The Chiefs would have enough flexibility even if they went out and signed Cofield. I absolutely support this idea, and I think this is a great way to go forward with finding the backup for Dontari Poe. Now, if the Chiefs are going to stay in-house with Poe or to sign a different guy after training camp ends, you can read a bunch more about all of those names and all of the reasons that would or wouldn't work in my article. It's going to be coming out on Arrowhead Addict in the next few days. The importance of finding a backup for Dontari Poe and what to watch for in training camp. All right, now I want to dive in to something that I sort of just came up with with a little bit of help from Ben Almquist, I just mentioned earlier, at Citadel Chief on Twitter. He was saying that he believes that the Chiefs essentially have a chance to win every game except for probably at Green Bay. And I see it a little bit differently. So I went ahead and went through the schedule again and came up with this premise. Now, I went through the games and put this percentage number 25% in to help decide if a game is winnable or losable. Now, I think if I think the Chiefs have a less than 25% chance to win a game, then that game, I think, is one that you can't expect them to win. If they have a less than 25% chance to lose a game, then that's a game that you have to expect them to win. Then there are games in that gray area that determine the rest of it. And what I came down to here with that 25% chance of winning versus 25% chance of losing formula is I think the Chiefs have 13 games that I would say are winnable at this point. I think they have 13 games that are losable at this point, which sort of shows the craziness of the NFL. So individually, I think they have a less than 25% chance to win at Green Bay in Week 3, at Denver in Week 10, and at Baltimore in Week 15. Those three games, I think, are the only three games on the schedule the Chiefs don't have a good chance to win. Say three games there that I think they have a less than 25% chance to win, which is still not unwinnable. I'm not saying there's no chance they win at Denver, because there is. And I mean, if Manning falls off or something, whatever. A bunch of ways they could win in Denver. But as of where we sit now in the preseason, say there's a less than a 25% chance they win those games, and there's at least a 25% chance that they win 13 of their 16 games. I am very happy with that. I think that's something we can't complain about. And the number you could argue is 14. Ben Almquist was saying that he would put it at 15 and say that beating Denver in Denver and winning in Baltimore are both still quite likely. And I'm a little more pessimistic on that side. Then on the other hand, I think there are 13 games that are losable for the Chiefs, where they have no more than a 75% chance of winning. And in most cases, obviously, much less than that. Now, I think they have a 75% chance or less than a 25% chance of losing to Cleveland at home, Oakland at home, and Buffalo at home. I think those games, the Chiefs have a 75% chance or better to win. Cleveland at home, Oakland at home, Buffalo at home. So I think that then that leaves the Chiefs with some quick math here, 10 games that basically live on the fence. You put the Chiefs at 3-3 with my formula here. Three losses at Green Bay, at Denver, at Baltimore. Three wins, Cleveland at home, Oakland at home, Buffalo at home. And then there are 10 games that will determine the Chiefs' season. Those 10 games are obviously the rest of the games. And if the Chiefs won all 10 of those, then obviously 13-3, they're probably getting a bye week. If they lost those 10 games, they would be 3-13, which would be a hideous showing that would cause absolute weeping and gnashing of teeth. In all likelihood, those games go more like 5-5. If they go 6-4 in those 10 games, they're 9-7. We all know how that math is going to play out, but I think that's an interesting place to start with saying there are these three games that there's a very good chance they lose, and these three games that there's an overwhelming chance that they win. Then you go from there. An interesting piece outside of that then starts with a Twitter question. I believe this is based around an article here on Arrowhead Addict, but it was tweeted to me from @GoatM. So for the next episode of RTK, I'd like to know your take on the three most important games of the 2015 season for the Chiefs. And I want to say that all of them need to be in that 10-game set, and I think they do. Now, one of those games that wasn't in that set was Denver at home in Week 2. Talked extensively about that earlier with Sean Smith, what that game's going to look like. I think the Chiefs have somewhere less than 50% chance to win at home against the Broncos without Sean Smith, but not that 75%. So I think one of the three most important games of the year is Denver at home in Week 2. There's no Sean Smith, but the Broncos also, they don't have Ryan Clady, who was injured. I mentioned earlier they don't have Julius Thomas, the tight end. There's some doubts about Denver's offensive line. They lost Terrence Knighton, Pot Roast, their defensive tackle. So that's not an unwinnable game by any means. And I think that is going to determine much more than just one win. Versus Denver in Arrowhead, Thursday Night Football, that game is going to more or less determine the tone of the season and if the Chiefs are going to be playing for the AFC West from ahead or from behind. If they lose to Denver at home, they're going to be playing for the AFC West from behind through at least Week 10 when they have another shot to take down Denver in Denver. If they win at home, they're the favorites in the AFC West. They jump out to a lead. You presume that if they're going to win that game, they beat Houston the week before. So you're 2-0. Then you have two really tough road games at Green Bay and at Cincinnati. But even if they were 2-2 out of that stretch but had the leg up on the Broncos right there, the Chiefs are playing from ahead. So I think that's one of the three most important games for sure. Then the next very important game, I think, also is because of the tone, not necessarily because of the team, and it's not even a divisional game, but it's the Bears at home. Now, if things go well for the Chiefs, I'm maybe 3-1 out of that first four games, but that would involve two road wins, which is very hard in the NFL. So 2-2 would be, I would be absolutely pleased with 2-2. Either you're winning at Houston, then the Broncos at home, then you lose in Green Bay and in Cincy, or you beat Houston and in Cincy, and you lose to the Broncos and the Packers, however you figure that out. If you're coming out of that 2-2, that game in Week 5 with the Bears at home becomes kind of a must-win game in an untraditional way. The Chiefs would need to win that game to get that positive record back, or in a worst-case scenario, maybe they start 1-3 or 0-4, and that game becomes truly must-win. So it's the Bears. It's not a game that really impacts the Chiefs from a divisional standpoint, obviously, but from a tone perspective, seeing how they're actually going to play in the rest of the season, if they got off to a slow start those first four games, that game in Week 5 is going to be very important. So I would say that Bears Week 5 is also one of the most important games of the year. And then the third game that I think is very important, more important than the Bears game, less important than the Broncos, maybe. I guess I'll take that back. I'll say this is the most important game on the schedule as of right now. Week 14, the Chargers at home. At this point, the Chiefs are going to have two games. Well, the three games after this are at Baltimore, Cleveland at home, Oakland at home. I expect the Chiefs to go 2-1 in that stretch. This game with the Chargers at home is going to determine if they either need to upset the Ravens or if they just need to hold on, take care of business with the Browns and Raiders, and then they're either flowing into a bye week, into winning the division, into a wild card spot. I think the Chargers are going to be pretty good. Divisional games are always very important. So Chargers in Week 14 is the third very important game, chronologically third most important, but I would say overall that could end up being the key to this season is how the Chiefs perform against the Chargers in Arrowhead come Week 14. But Week 2, Week 14, and then Week 5 against the Bears is kind of the one that's on the fence, but I think it's going to be very important. You can make an argument for Week 7 against the Steelers. You can make an argument for Week 11, Sunday Night Football in San Diego. All five of those games, Broncos at home, Bears at home, Steelers at home, Chargers on the road, Chargers at home, and obviously even at Denver. But those five, I would say the five most important games because of how the schedule is looking like it's going to play out. That will absolutely change as we go. Whenever I say in Week 7, well, playing the Steelers out, this is huge for the Chiefs, whatever. That will be true at that point, if that's what I'm saying. But speculating from out here, those are the most important games. And I think, again, the Chiefs have 13 winnable games and 13 losable games coming around in 2015. And I really think that's an interesting way to look at the upcoming season. Another question from today's show came from Twitter. TyDeClaire44 asked what I thought about this Eric Kush article on Arrowhead Addict. It's a good piece here by Laddie Morse, one of the features from the Bleachers. And he talks about Eric Kush and his development, what to expect from him, and you know, if this job at center comes from Eric Kush, or becomes Eric Kush's job. He quotes, "Last August, Trez Paley of the Kansas City Star posted that Kush says he takes pride in playing hard and inspiring his teammates even under the hot summer sun throughout the organized team activities and training camp. Andy Reid calls him an energy guy. When it comes to being an energy guy, Kush says, quote, When we're trying to do, we're doing our team drills and even just 7-on-7, it gets tough. People start getting tired. I try to keep the energy up, try to dab everybody up and keep going so we can try to finish hard. It helps me too because everybody wants to just kind of hang their head and feel sorry for themselves. So there's that side of Eric Kush. We're talking about an energy guy, a hard worker guy, keeps the energy up. You need those kind of guys on an NFL team, no question. Now, we've also heard a lot of that stuff about Mitch Morse, the rookie coming in from Mizzou, who can play center, both guard spots. Whenever that pick came in, it was sort of expected that he would be in to fight against Eric Kush for the center job after Rodney Hudson left, and I still expect that on some level. But this article goes on to continue to talk about high character, strong reputation, the improvements that Kush has made throughout his time here. And then also an interesting quote from Ben Grubbs. He said, "Kush is very knowledgeable. He's been a good foundation for the playbook, and he's been helping me out. Him and Fish, Eric Fisher, they've been doing a great job. I don't want to be a burden too much, but those are some things that I haven't just quite gotten the grasp of yet, and they've been doing a really good job bringing me along with them." Eric Fisher and Eric Kush both stepping up and continuing to improve their game, improve their place on this offensive line on this team is all hugely important. And it sounds like Eric Kush is making a very, very, very good argument to keep Mitch Morse on the bench. And that's what it looks like right now. It's not just Kush taking over the starting job after Hudson leaves. When Mitch Morse was picked in the second round, it was assumed that he was the center of the future here. And we've seen Eric Kush play for the Chiefs in a couple of games whenever the starters were resting. We got to see Kush in the regular season. Kush played quite well. And that's a good sign. And I feel like if Kush was the only option, we wouldn't be horrified. It would just become kind of an uncertain quantity. With this article that I'll link to in the story for this show, definitely worth your time. It's starting to make me think that Kush will be the starter through camp, through the preseason, and if Kush isn't going to be the starter, he won't be on the roster. Mitch Morse is very versatile. If Kush gets through camp, preseason, and is the starter, which I think there's a very good chance he will be, but if he is the starter there, Morse will stay on the roster, obviously, because he can play any position he needs to on the offensive line, which is hugely, hugely important and hugely valuable. At this point, I'm kind of rooting for Kush to take the job. It gives a little more flexibility to the offensive line where Mitch Morse can jump in anywhere. And then that means that Kush really did beat out Mitch Morse, because otherwise you want the higher draft pick, to be on the field. So it's a good article. If you want to read more about Kush and his spot on this team, I'll link to the story in the article, and it's a good read to try to continue to piece his offensive line together. Another thing that's definitely worth keeping your eye on in training camp, seeing where these reps go. I think Kush will get the majority of the starters' reps through camp, through the preseason, and the Chiefs are either going to trust him as the starter, or they will release him by the end and then give Mitch Morse the job. That's going to do it for this episode of Roughing the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. A couple of news bits as we go out here. The Cardinals signed former Bengals tight end Jermaine Gresham. There was some thought maybe the Chiefs would look into him. The Colts released offensive tackle, right tackle, Godster Chairless. There's a lot of issues there that the Chiefs don't need to get involved in, but that's the kind of cut we want to keep our eye on when it comes to building up the right tackle on this team. And Denver defensive end Derek Wolfe was suspended for 4 games for violating the NFL's performance-enhancing drug policy. He was probably going to be fighting for the defensive end spot for the Broncos. Now he'll be missing that Week 2 game, where the Chiefs will be missing Sean Smith. Thanks as always for listening to the show. Share it with your friends, Chiefs fans who want to hear more stuff through the offseason and through the regular season as well. Stay in touch with me in the comments here or on Twitter at JB Briscoe. I want to hear from you what you want more of from the show, questions you have, and I want to hear from you about training camp, what you see, what you think is important, and that I should be talking about. Do my work for me. Bye, Mom!
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?